Hello, and welcome to another PDI podcast. I'm your host, Mark Oliver Wright, Clinical Science Liaison for the Central Region. With me today is Russ Olmsted, MPH, CIC, FAPIC, who has been an infection preventionist for more than 30 years and is the Corporate Director for Infection Prevention and Control Services for Trinity Health, headquartered in Novi, Michigan. He has served as a member of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Healthcare Infection Control Practices Advisory Committee, or HICPAC, and with backgrounds in biology and microbiology and healthcare epidemiology, he has developed an interest in the impact of the environment of care on healthcare-associated infections. As a longtime APIC member and leader, Olmsted has served as a board member, editor of the APIC text, and member of the editorial board of the American Journal of Infection Control, or AJIC. He was the first chairperson of the APIC Information Technology Committee, served as APIC president in 2011, and was awarded the APIC Carol DeMille Achievement Award. Welcome, Mr. Olmsted.
Hey, Mark, good afternoon, and greetings to our listening audience out there in podcast land. Thrilled to be part of this, and thank you very much for the invitation to jump on today's podcast. So, perfect.
Thank you.
You bet.
Can you describe what ATP testing is and how it has been used in healthcare?
Sure, happy to do that. So ATP stands for adenosine triphosphate and is basically an energy molecule found in all life forms. So that includes mammalian and microbial cells. It can be detected using a luminometer that provides a reading, and the measurement is, the output is called relative light units, RLU. So when I use that abbreviation, maybe going forward in the podcast, you'll all understand that. And in general, the higher the concentration of bacteria or organic matter on a surface, the higher the RLU, so the relative light unit on that one. So that's kind of a little bit of background. And then ATP is a coenzyme that works with enzymes such as ATP triphosphatase to transfer energy to cells by releasing its phosphate groups. ATP is quantified, as I mentioned, by measuring RLUs. And this RLU comes from a naturally occurring enzyme in fireflies called luciferase. We're going to go into a little bit of the history on that one for everybody's listening pleasure as well, and the luminometer is what actually measures the RLU. So the amount of light that actually gets kind of produced during this reaction with ATP and this luciferase is directly proportional to the amount of biological energy present in the sample being tested. And two research groups actually discovered ATP back in 1929, Dr. Cyrus Fisk and Yelapranga Subbaro at Harvard Medical School in Boston isolated it from mammalian muscle and liver cells. And then Carl Lohmann at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes in Berlin identified it in muscle. And then subsequent to that, or actually earlier, Raphael Dubois discovered luciferase and did this by kind of looking at early experience with bioluminescence is certainly present in natural life, so marine life, glowworms, and fireflies. And near the end of the 19th century, Dubois validated his hypothesis. He used bioluminescence in clams and cold water to make a glowing paste, split the paste into two parts. When he heated the first sample to near boiling, the glow disappeared immediately. The other glow that was not heated, still cold, eventually went out, but it was kind of a more prolonged luminescence that was observed. So basically that was what he came up with, and he discovered the two, when he combined these two substances, were responsible for the glow, and that's basically the reaction between ATP and luciferase. He named one substance the luciferin, or after Lucifer, the light bearer. Others of us think there's some different interpretations of Lucifer. And the other was called luciferase to indicate that it had been the properties of an enzyme. So that's where the kind of the I would say the foundational research that went into this particular method. And the luminometer, as I mentioned, captures that reaction and it's which produces light that's detected during that reaction. Looking currently in healthcare facilities, ATP is used as a process measure to determine the level of biological matter. And I think it's important for everybody listening to understand it detects mammalian and bacterial cells, but also detects organic matter on a surface. So it's not precise to just bacterial cells. And I think that's an important caveat that we'll talk about in a little bit later. Typically, we use it on an inanimate surface being tested. And I would say it offers a bit of an inference as to the level of microbial contamination, but certainly not as precise as, let's say, direct environmental microbiologic sampling. ATP also, interestingly, has been used, and I think this one has some potentially, in my mind, a little bit higher value, is looking at how well we're cleaning semi-critical devices like endoscopes. So there have been some great studies published by Dr. Michelle Alpha and her research teams at St. Boniface in Winnipeg, Canada. I'd recommend listeners for this podcast to start with looking at a couple of studies she's published. One was a use of the ATP in a busy endoscopy clinic in a facility in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And that was published in American Journal of Infection Control in 2018. And then 4 years before that, in 2014, she also did a, what I would say, a landmark study showing that this has some value in terms of assessing how well are we cleaning endoscopes, which certainly have been in the news both just right after that and continue to be, especially duodenoscopes in particular, a lot of concern with MDROs. So, and I think the last place in healthcare I would say that I'm familiar with is it is commonly used to assess cleanliness or the efficacy of processes used to clean used surgical instruments. So outside of healthcare, this has, I think, for decades been used in food services industries to assess, you know, how well our surfaces where we put fresh foods, certainly meats, those types of things, once they're cleaned, are they really clean, which certainly is also an important application. It was a long-winded history tour, but hopefully readers, listeners find that of interest. So.
That's fantastic, sir. So all that under consideration, would you describe ATP testing as a good measure for either qualitative or quantitative assessments for the cleanliness of a healthcare environment, aside from the endoscopes and surgical instruments that you mentioned?
Sure, great question. I would say, as always, Mark, it depends. That's a loaded question. ATP does give you one aspect of it is gives you a quantitative metric of the level of, you know, ATP and those RLUs that come out of the device used on a surface. However, there is published evidence indicating that the correlation between RLUs and concentration of aerobic bacteria in particular is not very strong. So there's some weaknesses there in that. Also, I don't know. I think there may be some international standards that tell you, you know, with this RLU, this surface is clean. If it's above that, it's not clean. That's somewhat of a moving target. I don't think we have any U.S. specific standards that, you know, describe that, maybe in food industry, but none that I've seen applied directly to healthcare facilities. So getting back to the correlation, some investigations indicate the RLU readings actually vary by the type of bacteria on the surface. So what's present, for example, not quite as good for, gram-negative bacteria. And then there are some RLU meters that have a variable lower levels of detection. So in other words, if the concentration is getting at, let's say, 2 logs or less, it may not be able to give you a reading. So it kind of varies based on the meter that's being used, which manufacturer or brand is being used, those types of things. And then interestingly, disinfectants that are used for inanimate surfaces to clean healthcare facilities, certainly very important, but the ATP itself, the measurement, there may be some interference with certain disinfectants. So for some disinfectant categories or types of disinfectants, the RLU actually goes up, And then other types that it suppresses or quenches the reading itself. So I think there's some challenges there with making sure you're aware of that. If you, let's say, the infection preventionist at a healthcare facility is considering use of ATP along with environmental services professionals. So ATP is one of the methods, importantly, for evaluating effectiveness of environmental cleaning by EVS and other healthcare personnel. So direct care personnel also have a role in keeping environments clean. And that's actually described CDC as a great resource on environmental cleaning. And there's a specific discussion of various methods of assessing how well we're cleaning, led by Dr. Gu and Dr. Carling. So would encourage colleagues listening on this one to take a look at those recommendations. Other methods described by Drs. Gu and Carling include direct observation, certainly works. Is it shiny clean, which tells you one thing, it looks good to people, but may not reflect microbial contamination or presence of organic matter. Environmental microbiologic sampling, as I mentioned, auger slide cultures. And then the other one would be fluorescent marking. So all of those are different methods available. I would say, Mark, you know, based on my experience, the most common methods probably are the, I would say ATP fluorescent marking, and maybe I would say infrequently some microbiologic sampling, but those would probably be the big ones that I can think of. Certainly direct observation also, I would say, is very pretty much day in, day out. Usually you have leadership or supervisors of patient care teams or environmental services. They do use direct observation, which certainly is readily available. You don't need a lot of fancy meters or microbiologic methods. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an assessment of some of the advantages or limitations of this method.
It certainly does. You know, it's interesting. I had some recent experience with microbiological sampling in the environment with another healthcare facility. And it didn't occur to me until we went down this path that not all clinical microbiologists or infection preventionists have experience with the sort of the technical aspects of how to collect environmental samples, whether you're doing something like a Rodac plate or something similar. And in fact, I think that's one of those topics that we assume, you know, we know more than we do sometimes. And if your methods are flawed, then your data might be flawed as well, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's all certainly very important to understand that. And likewise, when you, as the infection preventionist, take that Rodac plate down to your clinical micro team, they hopefully are going to tell you, hey, that's out of my wheelhouse. That needs to go out to an environmental microbiology laboratory, because you're right, all those procedures on how to process that result or that sample are quite a bit different than what we see with clinical specimens. So.
I wasn't aware until recently about the quenching effects that chemical formulations for disinfectants can have on ATP readouts, that you can essentially have a complete disconnect between what your luminometer is telling you and what you're actually able to grow off the surface. I think that's it seems like we have a lot of these really good soft tools, whether we're talking about fluorescent marking, which is, you know, probably, you know, subject to the substrate that you're using. If it's a microfiber cloth versus a paper towel, you're going to get different results, even if you're using the same solution, right? And it seems like what we really want is we want the perfect tool, and we just don't have that yet. Does that seem like an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I think that's spot on. It's kind of that classic understanding advantages and disadvantages of each technique, just like disinfectants. There's no single uber disinfectant that does it all, you know, from top to bottom, sideways to, backwards. So still looking for that.
As soon as we find it.
Disinfectant.
If you find it first, be sure to let the rest of us know too, will you?
I will do that, yep.
Well, you know, lastly, on a personal note, you've been a mentor to many infection preventionists, including me, over the tenure of your career. More than one of us have referred to you as the walking encyclopedia of infection prevention before even Google was a thing. What's been the biggest change you've observed in infection prevention over the course of your career, and what can new IPs or IPs that are new to the field learn from that?
Yeah, great question. Certainly appreciate that kind remarks, Mark. And I would say, probably for me, I learn as much from interactions with you and my other fellow infection preventionists, skilled and knowledgeable healthcare professionals and researchers. So it's been great. I love to learn and still, I would say, learning every minute. So especially of late over this past 2 years, it's been fascinating. So, I would love to be as capable as Google, but alas, I can't even hold a candle to Dr. Google or Miss Google or Ms. Google, whatever you want to call that resource, because it's really something readily available at our fingertips. I use it a ton, and probably the first place I punch in is PubMed, and then I'm off to the Research Foundation. So, in terms of observations of the field of infection prevention and control, and healthcare epidemiology, certainly never have lost the love and passion I have for what we bring to really protecting patients and healthcare professionals. I think that's always been what intrigued me with this, and certainly tie that in with microbiology, and it's been a perfect combo for me personally. Also, timely question mark, because APIC is celebrating its 50th anniversary, and there'll be a great celebration in Indianapolis coming up in June 13 through 15. So I encourage our listeners to all gather there, and be great to be in person. So I would say the biggest change I've watched over the years of my career really does reflect the broader scope of the universe of healthcare delivery. So that's included logarithmic and continued expansion of ambulatory care is going to continue and probably, supplant the focus that we've had historically on acute care settings. So keep that in mind. Deployment of informatics to improve safe and effective care certainly has been as important, I think, along with a lot of the most important bundles that we've developed to prevent device-associated infections and surgical site infections. And then certainly for me personally, I've seen a convergence of individual hospitals into large integrated care delivery networks that go from really primary care all the way through continuing care. So I think that, and then to put a exclamation point, this pandemic has and will continue to really impact healthcare for, I would say, years, if not decades to come. So I think that's, let's see, can I diverge real quickly? I just wanted to mention while we're on ATP, a couple of useful studies that our readers might, listeners may find valuable. One was a nice investigation by Omid Bakash in PLOS in 2014, and it actually found exactly what you mentioned, Mark. There's interference with various disinfectants with the relative light value units that are measured. And also there was strong statistical correlation between two different RLU readings on the same surface. Likewise with cultures, however, the correlation between ATP and direct microbiologic sampling in terms of, the signal was actually pretty weak. So that one, I think, is an important one to call out. And then real recently, while we were talking about pandemic times, there's actually a brand new study by Lesho and others that used ATP detection in addition to detection of viral RNA of SARS-CoV-2. And actually found the surface detection of the, again, this is viral RNA only, so it doesn't necessarily mean infectious viral particles, but detected on 66% of surfaces before cleaning, 23% after cleaning. Unfortunately, ATP levels on the RNA positive surfaces were not significantly different from RNA negative surfaces. So kind of highlights what we were talking about. So a little bit of a segue, but let me get back to you, Mark. Sorry about that.
No, that's totally fine. I had not seen that most recent study looking at RNA with SARS-CoV-2, and as you said, it reinforces some of our concerns with the technology to begin with.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, thank
That's
you
good.
for joining us today, Russ. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, but this has been an exceptional experience. And thank you to all of us in the all of you in the audience for joining us today as you continue to be the difference.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Mark, and happy disinfection to everybody. Thank you.
And happy birthday to APIC.
That's right. Right on. Thank you much.
Thank you.